Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're good. Hope you can hear me okay. Now, points and prizes, and I really do need you to help me with this. If you can hear me okay, then do let me know. Make sure I'm coming in loud and clear, mainly because for some reason that little video didn't play for me, but it seemed to for you. So I'm sorry about that. Might be a little bit of a technical glitch to start us off, which is a shame. But if you can let me know if you can hear me okay, if you're tuning in live, then that's great. Most of you, of course, coming in after the fact. For these on Mondays and Thursdays, we chew it over with the great and powerful within the MSK industry, and we've got a cracking guest for you today, so you don't have to tolerate me for half an hour. You can rest and we'll not worry too much about that. I'm going to bring you Chris Rayner in a second. If you've not paid attention to Chris's content before, you're in for an absolute treat when you do, because you inevitably will after this interview, to go and find him on YouTube across all the social media, including on Instagram, where I think he's at his very best on an Instagram story when he's shooting out in front of you to give you some decent public health myths in the orthopedic game, and they're really offering material and content that we can share, not just interprofessionally, but then also to patients. It's a real crossover appeal across those audiences. And so really wanted to get him on the show to discuss his subject matter, especially after you guys loved him on Therapy Live. Some really nice messages that show the crossover between sort of orthopedics and medicine, and how that needs to intersect with therapies and making sure we're not getting adversarial across those dimensions. So it's been great to be able to get him on the show. So hopefully a couple of buttons. I think we are streaming fine. Do shout if not, but I think that's all working okay. I just had a bit of a problem with the video intro on that start. But I'm going to click, get rid of my little frame there. And hopefully I can bring you Chris Rayner. Chris, can you hear me?
I can.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. For those that don't know, could you just give me a little bit of a potted history of your background as well as then your current job role?
Certainly. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon, so I'm a sports medicine specialist. Basically, I did my medical training over a period of about 12 to 11 years until about the year 2006. Then I did a sports medicine fellowship at one of our preeminent institutions, Western University. Then I started practice 2007. Since that time, I've been working primarily in a community hospital, although I do have a small academic appointment. So I do some teaching with medical students and residents. And as a community guy or a community surgeon, I've been focusing on a combined practice, which has sort of sports medicine, general orthopedics, trauma, and whatnot. And so that's my main focus. Over the last maybe 5 to 6 years, I started a business called Human 2.0, which is a movement and rehabilitation facility where we have physiotherapy, sports medicine, orthopedic surgery, movement training, and group fitness. And then finally, over the last 4 to 5 years, I also started a social media kind of enterprise where I talk about what we do in our facility and just talk about sports medicine, orthopedic surgery, and overall health and wellness in general. I talk about those principles and try to share those with people and try to educate people on things that they can do in their own life to make it so that they don't have to come see me.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the things that's really interesting about your work is that you are, it's clearly that it's far from a sales pitch on a, the conclusion isn't come and see me, it's I hope you don't need to. And that is obviously very refreshing from some that feel that they need to create content as a means of sort of generating business, when realistically your approach is one that seems to be respectful of the data, which suggests that the business is out there. We don't need to worry about people with pain and injury. There's plenty of them. In fact, there's a massive issue in workforce shortage if we were to try to treat them all one-to-one. So getting better public health messages out there is essential, and the economy of scale is plentiful for that. So I love that you've come to that conclusion. You seem to be really passionate about raising standards across, say, we call it MSK practice, but of course, you know, that's what I'm describing loosely in pain and injury, which of course then does intersect with sport. But is that something that then your various enterprises are, because they all funnel into that passion? Or what do you feel, if I asked you, drives you in the most part for why you do what you do?
So I do want to raise, so the short answer is yes, I do want to raise standards. The little bit longer answer is, So I'm a Canadian, a first-generation Canadian, but my parents are Jamaican heritage. Right. And when I grew up, we had nothing. My parents were factory workers. We didn't have anything. We couldn't afford to do anything. And so what I'm trying to do for people is I'm trying to bring value to them. And so I understand that there are lots of people who will not necessarily have the money to pay for, physical therapy, pay for chiropractic, pay for whatever. They may not have the education to be able to know what are the proper things that they should be doing in their life to maintain health and wellness. So I want to try to bring that to people. And I want to also try to have to teach people how to get the most value in the event that you have to go to a chiropractor, in the event that you have to go to a physiotherapist, how to get the most value out of that, right? So it comes from a desire to have people get what they need, not spend money or time doing extraneous things that are not worth it for them. And I really want to empower people just to be able to look. I'm a strong proponent of the idea of personal responsibility. And I think that health and wellness, there are lots of things that happen that are out of our control, and we have no ability to guide those things. However, there are many things that we can do to put ourselves in a better situation so that we can avoid some of those problems. And if those events do occur, there are ways in which we can make sure that we are healthier, better prepared to deal with those problems. And I just want to empower people and give them people the knowledge and the information to be able to do that for themselves.
Makes sense. I think socially, of course, health and education are such fundamentals for people to get true opportunity and for them to take and grab that responsibility and act on it. Historically, in those spaces, there was a lot of gatekeeping occurring from professionals that were then retaining that professional expertise, meaning that then it was difficult for people to express their personal responsibility for something that they didn't know what they didn't know. And so for you and others to be sharing material that then is accessible and using new media and technologies to try to do that means that then it becomes a credible option to actually create sensible responsibility and to apply things that you can learn as a lay person that doesn't need you to go and get a medical degree in order to actually then pursue sensible health behaviors and to educate yourself in the right direction to understand what you and your family can do to better themselves. So I can so see how that would fuel your fire. It's obviously a passion that we share.
Well, you touched on it, when you with the introduction in that I recognize, like I tell people this all the time, gravity and ice are my friends, okay? Like there is more than enough stuff. Like I don't need to, I understand I'm in Canada, right? So we have universal healthcare. And I understand in the United States, where a lot of my following is, that it's a little bit more competitive because they don't have that. So they do need to compete a little bit. But even in that context, seriously, gravity and ice are our friends. There is more than enough business, man. We don't have to go out trying to sell for business. I'm all about the education because I as you said, I can't treat them all one-to-one, right? So if I want to have the most benefit, if I want to have the greatest effect, the most impact, then I'm going to try to figure out how I can force multiply my message and get it out there. And social media is an excellent tool for that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's good. It has its perils and drawbacks, but the amplification of positive messages as well as the ability to sensibly counter bad ones is something that you've really struck a decent balance on and not always done well. If you overindulge sort of criticizing the negative, then sometimes it can get a bit too much of a jostle. But then similarly, when sometimes people go a bit too happy clappy and pretend that there aren't some of the, I would argue, darker forces or things that are misleading people into sort of pseudoscientific things that they would pursue, wasting money, as you mentioned earlier, on things that would be otherwise frivolous when they could, the opportunity cost for them to not pursue things that might help them. That's where it's something that the right sort of balance of calling out is sensible. You seem to have told that line well. On the orthopedic side, If I could just describe part of the landscape and say you feel free to disagree with it, but also I just wondered where your sort of head's at with it, is that if we overindulge structuralism, if we go back maybe 20, 25 years, and it was just that the pain and injury was all to do with what was broken or damaged, and therefore it was just whatever we could do orthopedic tests or medical imaging to just identify that and correct a fault, an architectural fault in the human body, and that if only we had better detection methods, then we'd know exactly at what cellular level things were damaged. And they were a very orthopedic model of that. And then there's this whole spectrum of people and time between that and then somewhat almost nihilistic about the fact that then structure suddenly doesn't matter ever, and that fundamentally it kind of moves completely past that, and that the human body can adapt over even open fractures. You know, I'm being a bit cartoonish now, but I'm just meaning that there's this overly structural model of which we grew out of, and then there's this sort of a bit more of a sort of new age adaptive process that then tries to then drag scalpels off every orthopedic surgeon and suggest that that should be a redundant trade. Right? Again, I'm extreme on that spectrum, but just wondering if I could get your reflections over that in terms of its time passing, as well as where you think we're at potentially as an industry on that continuum.
Well, as you point out very well, in the past it was all a very structural approach, and I see people quite frequently. Like in many respects, I'm a glorified carpenter, right? I'm looking for problems with structure, and I'm going to fix that. And in the past, we correlated those problems with structure to some kind of complaint that a person would have. But as we, as research becomes better, as we start to learn more about the body, more about human physiology, more about biomechanics, we start to, and more about psychology, we start to recognize that it is not quite so cut and dry. It's not just a clear cut picture like that. And a prime example of this, I just read a comment on one of my videos this morning before I came on here, and the person was saying how pain is such an interesting concept, because you can have people, and I see this all the time, you can have people that have no structural deficiency, no kind of problem, and yet they have 10 out of 10 pain. And then you can see people whose joints, like you look at the x-rays, you look at the imaging, and they can't, you can't begin to imagine how they could function. And they're like, yeah, I don't really have much pain. So clearly,
I always said they're usually a farmer. They're usually
no,
a farmer.
Well, no, but, exactly. They're usually, they just got to get stuff done, right? So, so clearly there is something there other than just the structural component. And this is something that we're starting to realize. We're not that good at it yet, but at least now we have a recognition that there is something else there. And this is something that has, even though we've not really understood it, it's something that has been there in the background lurking. I think about, for example, if you look at studies of ACL reconstruction in professional athletes, okay? So American football players or American basketball players. So if you look at the one-year outcome after ACL reconstruction, so this is now after they have done all their rehabilitation, they have returned their strength to baseline levels, all of that kind of stuff. Their function is equivalent to what it was in terms of strength, flexibility, all of those things. But when you look at their ability to play, it doesn't, even though they're back to play at a year, they don't return to their pre-morbid level of play until after 2 years. So it tells you that there's something going on in that second year, okay, that has nothing to do with strength, has nothing to do with the structure, has nothing to do with any of that. So it's a psychological component. So there's something else that's a part of that. And so data like that shows us that there was always something else there. We just didn't know what it was. And we're starting to get a better handle on that now. And I think that people who are sort of following what the literature is showing us are starting to recognize that. And when I first started our Human 2.0, like 6 years ago or 7 years ago, people kind of looked at that and were like, why you're an orthopedic surgeon, why would you do that? And I think that I was just trying to think outside the box about how to approach musculoskeletal wellness instead of putting things in silos, putting it all together and trying to think holistically. But I think people now are looking at that and they're going, yeah, this is a good idea. And looking at musculoskeletal problems in a more holistic manner like that, I think this is the way of the future. I think this is where we're headed.
Yeah, absolutely. And that naturally it lends itself to multidisciplinary working because you want to draw on as much expertise across the piece of MSK practice through orthopedics, through podiatry, through physiotherapy. And I think what I wonder about, you know, you're saying that we learned more, didn't we? We learned more about the body. We opened the black box that was where neurology meets psychology meets social determinants. We realized the fact that then why would someone not be influenced significantly by these things that were less easy to scan and poke and prod and test, but there were still quite obviously factors that were affecting them, that when we started to be a bit more careful, both with the study of them in research, but also the reflection over what was truly meaning causative response with our patients, like what had made the difference here, what are the patterns. It started to be more holistic, and so you were way ahead of the curve on that, I think, and it's something that it has to move in that direction. Otherwise we are always destined to be a little tribal and a little bit in our silos, and that we're always trying to bridge gaps, whereas the gaps need closing, not just bridging, right? It just becomes more natural that there are certain obvious intersections. Like if someone needs surgery, they ain't coming to me. But certainly someone that might need direct gym-based rehabilitation, it may be more appropriate for it to go to someone other than you, and that those things need to be communicated thoroughly. What are the key myths and misconceptions do you think that we still are lingering and loitering in orthopedic, would you say?
Well, I think there are quite a few, but some of the most common ones I would say is that as surgeons, we prefer surgery over non-operative measures, which okay. I don't think which is not actually the case. We are kind of taught to be the gatekeepers, and that we need to appropriately screen for candidates for surgery. And so for us, surgery is a last resort. Like we want you to do all kinds of non-operative things before you do that. So that's kind of one of them. I would also say that findings on imaging are the cause of your cause of your symptoms. And this is, when I talk about it in this context, I'm kind of talking primarily about back pain, but this still does apply to other areas of the body as well. And I have people all the time that are referred to me and they show me their MRI and they go, here's my MRI. See, it shows I have a disc herniation here, or I have this. And so now we have to operate. And I'm like, so number one, that there is poor correlation between what people see on imaging and what their symptoms are. Sometimes there is a direct association, but not... It more often than not, there is no correlation. So that's an additional myth that we are always trying to stamp out. A third one that I would say is that people often think, they've been told that their back is out of alignment. Whether this is a chiropractor or physiotherapist that has told them that, or just their friend at the gym, they're having some mechanical back pain and they go, oh, my back is out. My vertebrae need to be adjusted. And trying to explain to people that this is not the case. This is not how malalignment occurs. And also that the spine is a very robust, very, very strong and resilient structure, and forces that would actually put it out of alignment are of a traumatic nature, right? Like, and you would never be able to have footies, like rugby, like you know, American football, contact hockey. You'd never be able to do any of those things if your back went out of alignment as easily as people would say. So, so those are some of the main ones. I think that just to kind of go on from the back pain is just that people think, my back is sore. Surgery is the option. When like 95% of the time, surgery is not the option for your back, right? It's going to be a non-operative treatment of some type, which is generally speaking going to be exercise, physical therapy, and active modalities. So, you know, those are like off the top of my head, those are kind of four of some of the biggest ones that I spend time trying to correct for people and say, yeah, no, it's not that way.
No, I think those sound like some, you know, we've caught a fair number of prominent ones there. I think one of the things that my side of the industry, certainly on the therapy side, I'm a physio by background that works sort of multidisciplinary across MSK and sort of fairly famously indiscriminate about the flavor of certificate that's on people's walls, particularly evidence-informed osteopaths and chiropractors and sports therapists and stuff, it's athletic trainers, you know, really we're pulling from the same sort of evidence base. And so I speak about MSK therapies quite broadly now. I think we sort of overindulged the biomechanical model of causation because we were delighted to move away from the orthopedic one, right? We knew that then getting away from structuralism as a causal factor, like you said, most famously at the back, but also we know that when those studies come through, I think it was the hip, then shoulder, then. I mean, there's plenty there that are starting to show that correlation difference there in a lot of cases. We grabbed hold of biomechanical, say, well, if it's not that you're formed badly, it's that you're moving badly. Or that then that you, and it was so tempting for us because then we can get involved in that. We were never trained with a scalpel, but we can poke you here and prod you there and stuff. But the thing that you've just described about the fact that you couldn't then participate in contact sport or anything that was high velocity if you were so vulnerable and fragile, the same would apply to then. I imagine if you were so wonky, it would take for you to be so vulnerable, for us to be able to manually adapt and manipulate and to use our hands in such a way that your tissue characteristics were so flimsy that we would be able to correct them with our bare hands. The same logic applies. It's like a good understanding of basic science and the forces required. And when I speak to surgeons about this, they've got such a good insight into it because they said, look, I have to cut through that stuff. I know how tough it is. Like, it's not. And so sometimes, like on our side, you've not observed that if you've not spoken to enough surgeons candidly about this that aren't overindulging structuralism like the old days, then you're not going to necessarily learn that these are robust tissues that can also be trained to adapt and that you therefore don't want your patients going around feeling like they're fragile and flimsy. And I think that a good communication between surgeons and therapists can help people to not over-associate to those things, but then also not overindulge the idea that these magic hands are the things that are going to fix them and that they can be rehabilitated and that self-management can be prescient. So I definitely think that one of those myths there, definitely the therapy game over got stuck into, in part because we were trying to leave behind structuralism and we grabbed hold of the nearest thing, which was this biomechanical pathokinesiological model that we kind of got stuck into. So do you face that down in clinic a lot? Do you get people coming in thinking, well, okay, my scans look okay, I believe that, but I need retraining from these pathological movements that are damaging me. Is that quite a common sort of thing that you have to sort of counsel them on?
So I would say it's not super common. It's more common with me because people know, you know, I have a movement training facility. But I would say, here, at least in my area, my city, it's still people are focused a lot on the structural aspect of it. But there are some people, and I would say probably people who are younger, people who are on social media, and people who, you know, they've seen like Ido Portal, they've seen like people like this, right? And so they ascribe to that whole kind of biomechanic model. And so for that group of people in particular, they are more like that. And, you know, I think as with many things, It's not all structural. It's not all biomechanical. It's somewhere in the middle. We don't know what the balance is yet, but we, you know, the people who are structurally trained have to recognize that there's something else. The people who are biomechanically trained have to realize that there's something else. And you know, we'll meet in the middle somewhere, right? And over time, as we circle around this thing, we get closer and closer and closer and to what the truth is, right? I just am trying to be open and receptive to that and trying to figure it out. And I tell people all the time, you know, I don't know everything. I don't know exactly what, but I can tell you that it's not all what you see on your imaging, or it's not all just about how you move. It's a combination of things. And, you know, we're going to work. My goal, my job is to help people work towards figuring out what it is that for them is the problem. And let's work to the solution around that.
And I think that that message is super attractive to, I think that whilst, of course, we know that people can get sometimes carried away with making, pathologizing movement unnecessarily, or implying that people are wonky, or that this is all to do with one thing. But we all know that fundamentally, that we know the movement retraining exercises that can be to try and help people to not maladapt to certain movement patterns, or especially where they're holding certain protective tension to perceptions that they had, where they felt they were damaged, etc. We know that that is a core part, from what I can tell, of your practice. How much are you a heretic, I guess, in your orthopedic circles? Like, is it that, you know, are you seen as being kooky and holistic, and he's just sort of lost the core of the trade? Or are you seen, are most people embracing you amongst your professional peers of surgery?
So it's funny. In my city, there are about 60 or 70 orthopedic surgeons. And I'm kind of looked at a little bit as being one of the kooky ones, because they're like, why are you doing this? And why are you telling people what you're telling them? And you know, when I think about, for example, if I had patients, shoulder patients, post-operative patients, and I have them in our movement facility, and we're trying to teach them gymnastic strength training principles, and I'm getting them to do handstands, and my colleagues would be like, what the hell are you doing? And I'm trying to explain to people that, you know, to achieve a handstand position, there are things that you need to have, right? You need to have a requisite range of motion. You need to have good scapular control. You need to be able to have good active proprioception ability. And I'm like, aren't these things that we want for our post-operative patients? So why would I not use this tool as a means of you know, rehabbing people? So I'm trying to think novelly and creatively about what's, you know, the task at hand. And I'm not trying to follow the rote method, like, oh, this is, I learned it this way, so you're going to do it this way, and I'm going to train it this way to people. We have to use our, you know, use our intelligence, use our ability to think critically and to analyze and to say, hey, you know, I can draw parallels between this and that. And I can take from this, you know, this sort of profession or this speciality, even though it's not necessarily orthopedics, it still has something value, and I can take and I can use that for my situation, whatever it may be. So I think they think I'm strange, but I think time will tell. And the one thing though that I think is very interesting. So, you know, our facility is about 7 years old, and just recently on the other side of town, there is a group of orthopedic surgeons that kind of try to emulate and recreate something, you know, what that is similar to what we have. And, you know, to me, I think that regardless of what people say, that is the moment when the light bulb went on, and I'm like, oh, so yeah, I'm the kook a little bit, but now it looks as though you guys are starting to see that there's some value to this. And that, and also that there are people, you know, in a community of 70 orthopedic surgeons, there are bound to be people that I don't like and that I don't get along with. When I see referrals from orthopedic surgeons that I don't see eye to eye with, when I see those referrals coming into our office because people recognize that we get the results and that what we do works, that to me is the testament to say, hey, okay, people are buying in. Reluctantly, slowly, but people are buying
in. Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it's funny because it was this historic orthopedic model to characterize it as being sort of procedural, you know, see one, do one, teach one. This is the way to do it, and these are the steps. Everything can be made into a flow chart or an algorithm or a bullet point list. And so to break that and to start to draw on other disciplines and to learn and update based on the evidence is obviously a much more mature model and one that they have to follow, otherwise they'll be left behind. But I suppose my last question would be, most people wouldn't have the stomach for that, though. There's a lot of people that have a disposition that they would rather follow, and a professional community of practice that they would just want to be. Yeah, they might push the edges of it slightly, but they generally want to be compliant. You seem to have a bit of a streak of doing things quite differently in a number of different ways, right? It's not like one of your five things that you do and touch is a bit different. It's like multiply, you've broadened the horizons on every little part of it. So is that just by nature you are a bit out there in that direction?
For sure. I remember as a child, my mother said that I used to, you know, run around and run into walls and you know, all that kinds of thing. And I think that although it was not diagnosed at the time, I think that I was probably ADHD child, right? I just have, you know, endless amounts of energy, and I'm always just trying to think about different ways to do stuff and novelty and exciting things to try. And so I think for me, it's not enough to just to do it the same way everybody else does. Because sometimes I look at that and I think, oh my God, it isn't it painfully clear to you that this is not working? That this is like, that we need to be better. Like that is the overarching goal for me, to always trying to be better. And it's funny, if I look at even the simplest things that I do, say example, surgeries that I do, the easiest things, arthroscopy, knee arthroscopy, whatever. I am always, every day, I couldn't just go in and just do the surgery. I keep thinking to myself, okay, how can I make my portal access better? How can I do this better? How can I shave some time off of this surgery? How can I eliminate steps? How can I become more efficient? I can't stop that. It happens all the time. So all of these things that I do come from this desire to want to be better at what I do, wanting to provide more value. I walk around all the time saying in my head, I say this, more value, more value, more value. How can I create more value? It's not enough for me. Like, I could easily have just, you know, done my orthopedic practice. I work my weekdays. Then I go to my cottage on the weekend, hang out, do that, and call it a day. I could easily do that, but I my temperament will not allow me to do that. I cannot. I have to. It's like, there's this thing that just is a fire that keeps saying, how can we be better? How can I be better? How can I do more? How can I give more? That's what it is.
Absolutely. Well, creating efficiency is another way of which we can add value, as well as then creating those different avenues and facets within each of them. When someone catches our attention initially, it's such a pleasure when you look into them further and realize that that's not just the only thing they're doing. And that they've then also solved problems adjacent to that in our industry. And that was exactly what happened with your stuff, is that it might well have been, and I can't remember exactly what it was, the video that first then popped up to move us to enjoy that content. But then you look a bit further into Chris Rader and you realize that the solutions to the problems that are in this world for healthcare in our industry is not just staying in his lane even there. He's been interested in one lane. It's multiple lanes, and it's really something that is massively admirable, huge inspiration to many of us. And it crosses well across cultures as well, across health systems. The messages that you're providing are things that can be, as I said, shared with patients directly, as well as then helping into professionally to bridge some of those gaps when people can sometimes be tempted to be tribal. So thanks for what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Not that you're ever going to stop by the sound of things, don't get me wrong. But could you just tell people a little bit in closing as to where they can find out more about you? What's the best way to get your
content? Sure. So as you mentioned earlier, people can follow me on Instagram. So Stable Knees with a Z at the end. So I'm Stable Knees on Instagram and Twitter. I'm on TikTok. I've started to do stuff on TikTok as well at dr.chrisrainer. And my biggest platform, which is where I can do long form content, is on YouTube. And so if they just look up Dr. Chris Rainer, then they'll find my channels. I have three channels on there. So Dr. Chris Rainer, which is my long form content, educational, but sort of taking current events and that kind of stuff. And then I have Dr. Chris Rainer podcast, which is a new thing where I do these kinds of conversations with people. And then they can see our rehab stuff at Human 2.0 Fitness on YouTube. So those are basically the platforms where they can find me.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time and really appreciate your work. Excited to see where it goes next, because no doubt that will surprise us again. But in the meantime, we'll see you soon. Thank you guys for tuning in. Chris, if you just hang around for a couple of minutes, I'll meet you backstage. But for the rest of you, clear off. I'll see you on Thursday.
No problem.
Cheers, guys.